broadcasting from a tiny studio located somewhere in North America to the world. Waging war on the matrix of confusion.
Stars and lights and fires.
One of them has a carrying a very large weapon.
I am really deeply worried. We have two grandchildren who are 6 and 8, and I believe they are in greater danger of dying from enemy activities than we were.
There's no reason, Bob, that young American soldiers need to be going into the homes of Iraqis in the dead of night.
The United States must secure its borders. This is a basic responsibility.
I doubt anyone here would recognize civic virtue if it reached up and bit you in the ass.
The hard part about playing chicken is knowing when to flinch.
And now, Dark Matters. Here's Don Ecker.
And welcome back to another edition of Dark Matters Radio. I am your host. My name is Don Ecker, and you are tuned in right here at the Dark Matters Radio Forum on the Paracast. Well, okay, gang, I've got a surprise for you. This is a brand new edition of Dark Matters Radio, and it's something that kind of came into being by the fact that for the last couple of months or so, I've been going back and digging out all those old copies of Dark Matters Radio as well as UFOs Tonight and have been posting them up there. Now, I've got to tell you, going through that and listening to some of those shows and posting them online, as well as digging through literally hundreds and hundreds of tapes, I came across some stuff that, quite frankly, I had just about forgotten was even there. Now, I guess this should be a good time to kind of let you in on how this guy, Don Ecker, happened to break into radio to begin with. Well, back in the very early 1980s, while my wife, Vicky, and I were then publishing and were the sole publishers of UFO magazines, often media would get in touch with us. Now, there was a radio station in Glendale that one week in late 1991 called up the offices and wanted to invite Vicky to appear on their show. The radio host's name was Jim Hawthorne. Now, Hawthorne was a legendary name in the Los Angeles area, going all the way back to the 1950s, being notable in both television, the early 50s television, if you can imagine that, and radio. Now, he was a pretty big thing right up through the 60s, when finally, I guess Hawthorne decided, I've had enough of it. But this radio station in Glendale was able to convince Hawthorne to come on up and start doing a weekly broadcast. Now, at the time, Hawthorne was living in San Diego. So what that meant was every weekend he'd jump in his car, motor up to L.A., go into the radio station, do his thing, and then motor back the next morning, which was Sunday. Vicky mentioned me, and a week later, I appeared on it. Now, after the show was over that I first appeared on with Hawthorne, we started talking about radio in general, and he expressed to me his fascination with the overall UFO topic, which went back many, many years. I proposed doing a weekly spot with him, bringing in guests from all across the spectrum that he could interview, and I ended up then co-hosting for a number of months. It wasn't until the end of January 1992 that Hawthorne got tired of driving up from San Diego on a weekly basis because really he wasn't making any money at it. And I was making absolutely nothing, although the experience I garnered from that I later found to be very valuable. But Hawthorne decided the end of January, and he walked in and he dropped it on me, the show that he announced would be the last one, literally at the very last minute. And needless to say, I was very disappointed. But just to give you an idea of Hawthorne and the old school radio, I brought in a clip here that I thought you would find interesting. Now, this particular clip came from January the 4th, 1992, just a couple of weeks before Hawthorne and I did the very last show of what Hawthorne was calling the UFO show. And I had brought into studio Dr. Barry Taff. But stand by and give a listen.
KIEB Glendale, Los Angeles is the talk of the town. It's 10 o'clock.
And you know what that means. The UFO meeting will now come to order. Two UFO experts and me, the middleman. My name is Hawthorne. Our usual guest here every week, Don Ecker from UFO Magazine. And our special guest tonight, Barry Taff, who has a background of paranormal and phenomena of UFOs. I guess they intertwine somewhere, the paranormal. How, I'm not sure, but we'll find out about it. Give us a little background, Don, on Barry here.
You bet, Hawthorne. Incidentally, Happy New Year to you and to everybody that's within our listening voices. Barry Taff has been involved in investigating weird, strange things for about 20 years now. He has written a number of articles for UFO Magazine, going back almost the entire time that UFO Magazine has been published, back to 1980.
And
he's
there
had
we
some
are.
Really
so anyway, Hawthorne finally decided the end of January of 1992 to pull the plug. Now, this kind of left me at a quandary because, to be quite honest with you, not only did I enjoy the heck out of doing radio, but I thought radio could play a very important part in educating the public. I was so arrogant as to think we could educate the scientific establishment. And how would we go about that? Well, the same way I went about proving a criminal act when I was a police officer, by the facts, by impeccable witness testimony, and so forth. Little did I know back in those days, because in those days I actually believed that with just the right case, with just the right testimony, and with just the right facts, finally, someone would be able to prove the reality of this phenomenon. Of course, it took me many, many years and years later that I finally opened my eyes to what was really happening with the subject of UFOs. And it's much like many other areas of human endeavor. For example, the idea of climate change. Now, not to get off into a political rant, but is there climate change? Undoubtedly. For billions of years that this planet has been here, it has gone through numerous, too many cycles of weather changes to count. The big question is today, are human beings really a part of that climate change process? But look, we're not getting off on that. What I want this show to do today is to discuss the role that radio plays in the subject of UFO and phenomena research. And has it done a good thing, or is there entirely too much schlock out there? Now, if you come to the Paracast, you probably come to this radio forum to listen to the Paracast radio show because you know that the two hosts, Gene Steinberg and David Biedney, do not brook fools easily. If somebody comes on their show and says, I've been on a spaceship, the aliens took me to Venus and Mars, you can damn well bet your bottom dollar they're going to demand some kind of proof or laugh that fool right out of the studio. When I was doing radio on a weekly and even a daily basis, when I had my five-night-a-week program on the Liberty Works radio network back in the late 90s, I had the same attitude that I had when I was a detective. And that was basically, if you're coming in here to tell me extraordinary things, well, sweetheart, you can better bet your bottom dollar I'm going to demand extraordinary proof. And on more than one occasion, not only on my radio show, but in the pages of UFO Magazine, I exposed hoaxers and charlatans. Now, a very recent show that I uploaded to the Dark Matters Radio Forum is the show with Russ Estes and Dr. William Cohn. Now, in that show with Estes and Cohn, we started out the program by talking about a guy that Russ Estes had conducted basically a video expose on, a fellow by the name of Harley Byrd. Now, if you've listened to that show, you'll know that Russ played a number of excerpts from his video expose with some rather extraordinary claims that Harley made and Harley's version of facts. Now, basically what this guy was all about was something called the Hollow Earth Theory. And he claimed, depending upon which day of the week you happened to talk to Harley, that he was either the grandson or the nephew of Admiral Richard Byrd. Now, during Russ's extensive investigation, which incidentally I also helped on, he spoke to Harley's father, who was then still very much alive and kicking, and basically told Russ that, hey, my son Harley's had mental problems for a very long time. Now, what really kicked this particular episode of UFOs Tonight off was the fact that Harley had made the big time. He was going on Art Bell's program, Coast to Coast. Now, a little about Art. When I began broadcasting back in the very, very early 90s on the cable radio network, at that particular time, I was the only game in town that was doing a weekly program on esoteric subjects, UFOs, phenomena, conspiracies. At the time, Art Bell was still broadcasting, but he was broadcasting on satellite radio, and it was primarily political talk. Now, hey, let me tell you this right up front. I will be the very last guy to ever take anything away from Art Bell. The guy hit it, and he hit it big. He had the very good fortune of interesting a guy down in Las Vegas, a multi-billionaire who was in real estate, to basically back what he was doing. They brought Art first on a major radio station in Las Vegas, and not before too long, he began syndicating around the country. Now, Art had over the years many shows with some stellar guests. But the main difference between what I was doing at the time on a much smaller scale and what Art was doing was the fact that I challenged my guest if they came in and they had some crazy story they were trying to float. And I also, I'll be very, very honest, I cherry-picked my guests. The reason? Well, quite frankly, I wanted to make sure that my audience heard the most factual evidence and information that was available out there. Art was much more interested in entertainment. Now, I'm going to talk a little more about his take on things a little bit later, but let's get back to Harley Burt. So when Russ Estes found out that Bird was going on Bell's show, he called me up and he told me about it. Now at this time, I got to tell you, we had already been on the receiving end of a barrage of hate from this guy. He had a little trick that he would do. He would go down to the Van Nuys courthouse, pick up fists full of court documents to file claims, bring them home, fill them out, and I still kept everything he sent me. And I'll tell you, an English teacher would have gone nuts over this guy. Not only was his spelling atrocious, his education was almost non-existent. And it's kind of funny, considering the fact that he was trying to pass himself off as a PhD, Dr. Harley Burt. But at any rate, it ended up finally, we, both Estes and I, and other people at that time in the UFO field, started receiving death threats from this maniac. We contacted the Los Angeles Police Department. We contacted the Postal Inspector, the FBI. Nobody wanted to hear about this guy. In other words, they did nothing about it until finally we got a document signed by Harley, who was trying to pass himself off as a Los Angeles Sheriff's Department lieutenant. Then we finally got some action on this guy, and the Sheriff's Department sent some investigators out to have a little talk with Harley. Now, Harley was not unknown to the police. At one point, he had even been arrested for public indecency in a park. But to get back to the art show. So Estes, being in media, being a professional, and of course me with my career as a radio broadcaster, decided the best thing to do would be to contact Art Bell. So Russ called Art up. Art refused to discuss his guests to Estes. Russ tried to fax him some of the investigation that he conducted on him. Bell was having none of it. So he asked Russ, he said, well, why don't you come on the show and you can debate Harley? Well, of course, Estes had absolutely no interest at all in even talking to this moron, much less debating him. So Art Bell called me up at my office, left a message on the answering machine. I got back in touch and told him I had no interest. Not only did I have no interest, but I had my own radio show to concern myself with. So Art brought Harley on. Now, this next radio clip I'm going to play for you is the last part of Harley Burt's interview with Art Bell on Coast to Coast, and you'll hear Harley flying around the room like a crazed Tweety bird. Finally, even Art had enough, and oh my God, he lost the connection. But hey, let me play that for you. I think this will be very instructional.
To the South Pole 3 years later, but it was actually 10 years. He went in 10-year intervals, and in the meantime, he would actually resign his commission from the Navy to take civilian money to sponsor these art. So it's a complex thing, but I learned all this through all of his books and material that we got after Dad died. So
right. To
answer the lady's question, yes, the Admiral was at the South Pole in 38, as early as 38, on a major expedition with 5,000 men and 3,000 ships and planes. And people say, well, why does he need all that equipment to chart the Antarctica region, which is very large. It's as large as China. Well, actually, we were down there looking for the lost blonde Aryan race that no one really wants to talk about. Adolf Hitler had developed 50, 60,000 super blondes. You probably remember that, Linda?
No, Linda's not here anymore.
Well, to answer her question, the Admiral had a conflict with the blonde race at the South Pole. Also, the opening down there.
But these are the people. I wonder if these are the same people that the ufologists call the Nordics.
yes, and it's more complex than that, Art. There's a 7-foot blonde Aryans that supposedly come from outer space that were there as a support group for Hitler's blonde race of 50,000 to 60,000 people. Are you abreast of that yet?
No, I'm not.
It's a pretty bleak a scenario, but you remember at the end of World War II.
Well, it is. I mean, you would imagine, Doctor, that if there was some coalition, their technology would have been better, and they'd have whooped our butts. But it didn't.
They say that they did.
Well, yeah, but they didn't.
Well, they had a conflict there, apparently, according to my research and five or six.
I see no conflict. Germany basically was destroyed.
No, they had flugel rods, Art. They had flying saucers. They had four types.
Well, maybe they escaped, but you know, Germany was. The Third Reich, doctor, was verifiably historically destroyed.
Yes, Art, but they had these four types of flying saucers. They're called Foo Fighters, if you remember your history.
I recall World War II fighters seeing things that they called Foo Fighters.
Yeah,
that
was the Schoenberger craft. It was a 4,000. They tried to suppress this. There's a guy named Trzezinski that's on the circuits that they don't even let into the conferences because it's so volatile. The suppressed German technocracy is called.
All right, hold on, Doctor. Yeah. Another question. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Harley Bird.
Hello, Doctor.
Hello.
Really nice program tonight.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. Art's a great guy.
Yeah, he is.
Where are you?
I'm in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota.
Oh, Minnesota. Is it cold up there yet?
It's getting cold. It's starting to snow a little bit.
Yeah, I grew up in the Plains region. That's why I moved out here permanently.
No doubt, covering the holes that go down.
Yeah. You got openings up there, right?
Openings of...
into the inner earth, there's supposed to be some large openings in that area.
Dad, can you tell me where they're at so I can visit them?
Well, wherever they are, they're going to be locked up with usually they're the one in there's one up in Idaho with a sphinx over it with a great big gate where you can't get in. But Minnesota, it's around the lakes area there.
Wow. I'll look into it.
Yeah, it's. I'll tell you. I know a guy that can send you some information.
Well, if you're gonna do that, you check in with us again, sir, please.
Yeah.
You're okay.
Hold on, though. That's not my question.
All right.
You were talking about Dr. Strangis.
Yes.
I'm really interested in Dr. Strangis. I was one of the people that called Art Bell and had him get him on.
Yes.
I don't know if Art Bell remembers that or not.
I talked to Frank last night.
Yes. And the question, sir?
The question is, you said you saw a photograph in Dr. Strange's office?
Yes, sir.
On the opening?
No, okay. It was the city that the Admiral discovered that he was taken into with a lot of alien species inside the Frank Lloyd Wright city. They look like a Disneyland city. Have you ever been to Futureland and Disneyland?
Yes.
It's pretty much like that.
Wow.
And he describes it as a Frank Lloyd Wright city, and when I saw it, I didn't know where Dr. Strange had got it, but he's been a Hollow Earth advocate for about 30 years.
Yeah.
And he follows the Nazi blonde thing more than anything.
Okay.
He wants to know about where the lost blonde Aryan race is.
Mm-hmm.
But so do I. I've got an article coming out next month, Art, in UFO International called The Lost Blonde Aryan Race.
Mm-hmm. All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Harley Bird. Hello.
Hi, Art and Harley. How's it going?
It's a familiar sounding voice.
Is it? My name is John, and I'm in Olympia, Washington.
Hi, John.
This is sort of a related question to what you're talking about. Maybe
all right.
One or the other of you can answer. I'm wondering about the whole Ring of Fire, and I've tried to keep up on it, and I mean, of course, everybody knows about California, whether they believe it or not. But I'm wondering about the area I'm in. What's going to happen here, if anything? What are the dangers? You know,
you want to handle that Art Scallion says it's going to fall off in the ocean.
Is that right?
Well, yeah, if you look at Scallion's map, after the massive Earth changes, whenever they begin to trigger, not only his area, but my area...
Right.
And, of course, Doctor, your area.
Right. He says Beverly Hills is going to be an island.
see what I mean about a crazed Tweety bird? But I think very soon now, you're going to hear Art finally have just about enough of Harley Bird.
You'll be traveling down to the territory you're talking about right
well,
now.
I have a boat in my backyard here, Art.
Concrete?
No, it's got Mae Wests and a raft in it, by the way.
Well, a raft would be handy in that case. First
yeah.
time, call us toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. Okay, wait a minute. Hold it. I'm not allowed to have you put your last name on the air, sir.
Okay.
I'm sorry. So let's just start again. Your first name is Tom?
Yes, I'm Tom.
And you're where, Tom?
Auburn, Washington.
Auburn. All right. Your question is?
Washington yeah. State?
Washington, Auburn, Washington. My question is,
Washington, D.C.?
No, Washington State.
Okay, Washington State.
Yeah, the program is very interesting, but it seems to me like you can't stay focused, and your geography of your story is all over the place.
Well, not really. It's all interrelated, you see. Like the inner Earth, when they went into the inner Earth, they went in there because the aliens were coming out here because of the nuclear blast. We started those nuclear blasts, like we said earlier, in 47. Okay, and then we put them underground. When we put the nuclear blast underground, it shook everything. It's like shaking a hornet's nest. Okay, so we're not really flying all around. What the Admiral was doing was researching where the Los Blancs Aryans were, and we inherited that whole megaton bomb stuff from Germans.
All right. Caller.
So we're not really all over the place. It's all interrelated.
Caller, do you have a specific question?
No, I just can't make up much out of what he's
you
saying.
Don't believe me. Don't believe Art. Don't believe John Lear or Bill Cooper. Read more. There's books out there at these occult bookstores. Now, occult is a dirty word. See, it's esoteric knowledge.
All right, thanks.
All right, thank you. And stand by, Doctor. We'll be right back to you. Are you tired of struggling just to get by financially? Let's not even talk about retirement. This job you've got doesn't pay. We will do so in just a moment. We're almost done, but somehow we lost connection, so we'll try and reestablish that right here at the top of the hour. Let me take a second out to go ahead and mystery, because Dr. Bird, like every guest, is carefully advised that if they are disconnected, if that's what occurred, they should hang the phone up immediately and we would redial. But that line has been busy, so we will conclude that interview on that unfortunate, and I might add, rather mysterious, possibly even subterranean mystery. Well, anyway, welcome back, everybody, and we are about to launch into open lines.
And Art lost Harley. Harley was, I think, too crazed even for Art. Now, another example of radio schlock was to happen a year or two later with something called the Comet Hale Bopp fiasco. Now, Hale Bopp was a comet. It was around late 1996. And at that time, Hale Bopp was very apparent in the heavens. And on Art's Coast to Coast show one night, a guy called in by the name of Chuck Schrammick. Now, I knew Chuck. I knew Chuck from my radio program, UFOs Tonight, where he had been over the years a frequent caller. Now, Chuck was also in radio broadcasting down in Houston, Texas, and was known as quite a funny guy, also a prankster down there among his fans and friends. But he was also very critical of hidden NASA information and governmental information. For example, at the time he had websites where he expressed his analysis of what was really happening with things like the face on Mars, the Cydonia region of Mars, NASA, the UFO subject, and what have you. But one other thing that Chuck did, he was an amateur astronomer. And when Hale Bopp was making its appearance in the heavens, he was not only observing Hale Bopp, but also taking photographs of it. Now, one of the pictures that Chuck took seemed to show something, an object, God only knows what it was, traveling by the comet. Shramik referred to it as a Saturn-like object. And the picture is out there on the web. If you haven't seen it, it's easy enough to find a photograph of it. And as a matter of fact, I even included a photograph of this in my goodbye letter that I wrote and published to the UFO community when I left active UFO research back in early 2007. If you go to the Dark Matters Radio Forum, you'll find a copy of it up in the sticky thread. Now, this photograph that Shramik took, and he expressed his confusion, he had no idea what it was, sent it to Bell. Now, Bell immediately posted it on his Coast to Coast website. And ladies and gentlemen, the dam broke. Soon there was speculation and conspiracies swirling about this like never before. Now, people like Dr. Courtney Brown, who claims to be a remote viewer and at the time had an organization called the Far Sight Institute, claimed that he and his members remotely viewed this object and it was an alien spaceship. Other people jumped on board, not the least of which was Dr. Doom himself, Major Ed Dames, and many others. Even Whitley Strieber got pulled into this. Now, Bell had had Courtney Brown on his program, and Brown told Bell that a world-renowned astronomer had told Brown that, in fact, this object that Shramik photographed was an alien spaceship. And within a very short period of time, and I believe if my memory is not failing me, it would have been around 2 weeks, this guy was going to come forward and make a huge public announcement. Well, of course, it never happened. And Bell began taking more and more heat. And it finally totally collapsed when an obscure nutcase UFO cult by the name of Heaven's Gate committed mass suicide down in San Diego in around March of 97. Then, good God, it did break. We at UFO Magazine were literally snowed under by media, literally from all across the world, that contacted us wanting us to go on the air and make quotes about what had happened. I ended up writing an op-ed piece because Bell began to take massive criticism from all across the board. People like James Randi went on radio here in Los Angeles and openly blamed Bell for this mass suicide. Well, of course, that was ridiculous. Bell was no more culpable for those people committing suicide than a fly on the moon. But what was Bell culpable about? Well, in my personal opinion, for not being discriminating when he allowed these people to come on his massively huge radio program and say some absolutely astounding, even frightening things. This next clip that I'm going to play for you, showing this true radio schlock, is once again taken from Bell's Coast to Coast. And his guest that he brought on to make these frightening and outlandish predictions was none other than Major Ed Dames, a.k.a. Dr. Doom, somebody that claimed a remote viewing prowess, and somebody that absolutely scared hell out of those people too dumb to think for themselves. Stay tuned, because this next clip, well, I'll just let it speak for itself.
Ongoing for 20 years, they admitted. He now has a private company called SciTech. That's the major's background. Keep that in mind as you listen to the following interview. Roll it, Oregon. I got a fax a little while ago from Major Ed Daines. He is president of SciTech. They do remote viewing. It was the subject of Nightline. You'll recall the government, over many years now, has dumped a lot of money and time and effort into remote viewing. So it's not as crazy as it might seem. The facts from Major Dame says the jet stream is beginning to shift and writhe. In several years, it will sporadically drop down near the deck. We are the deck here. Look forward to catastrophic weather changes and very dark skies within the next few years. 125-mile-per-hour microbursts, 300-mile-per-hour grazing winds pick up lots of dust. And he says, I'll save the really grim environmental stuff for later. And I managed to get him on the line. I know it's very, very late. Major, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Eric.
Let's see, where to begin. This is a pretty serious fax, but you know, it's backed up by another little news item I've got. People saying that suddenly that the weather we've been having is unusual, is not normal, is not cyclical, that something is going on, and that seems to be exactly what you're saying. What can you tell us?
We have the company, SciTech, in addition to our training and our high-level contracts that we perform for various agencies and corporations, we have two in-house projects. One is an in-house study, an environmental study, and the other is a project that we call Project Starman. These are our own projects, initiative projects, if you will. The environmental study has been ongoing for about 2 years now. It'll probably take us another year to finalize our results, if we have another year. And using technical remote viewing, the same methods we use to track terrorists for the government and to find hostages, and to cross-cue other intelligence systems during the Gulf War. We use these methods for peaceful purposes. SciTech civilianized the technology.
Right.
We began to download data indicating that human babies would be dying soon, many human babies. And so I won't get into all the technical aspects of this, but to make long story short here, it appears that we're dealing with a very immunosuppressed planet in technological shorthand. Babies will begin to die, I think, because of this. Many human babies. If you look at the surroundings now in terms of the biosphere, we will probably not have any frogs left on the planet in a couple of years.
I've seen stories about disappearing frogs.
Yeah,
that's right.
What's happening, our work indicates, again, not finished studies, but our own study indicates that shortwave ultraviolet is killing frogs' eggs. Eggs are laid in shallow parts of the water, and they're deionizing radiation from the UVB, the short ultraviolet rays, are killing, first mutating and now killing the eggs. So that is one aspect that we're looking at. So we have dying human babies. Essentially, what it appears to be is allegorically like the planet is administering its own antibiotics. Antibiotics to take off or to take out something that is ailing its surface.
Us.
Yeah, and ultraviolet's a good way of accelerating that. So you'll see a lot of mutations, of course, in bacteria and viruses, particularly bacteria. That's the information that we have. Again, our report won't be finished for another year. But I thought I would tip you off, particularly about the problem with babies. It appears that there is a bovine AIDS that is developing. this will jump ship, and it's transmitted by dairymen who will use the same needle to inject hormones in their dairy cows. Of course, they'll deny this until they can't any longer. But this bovine AIDS will become a toxicological insult, that's the terminology in toxicology, to human babies whose immune systems are nascent, and they will die in relatively large numbers.
God.
So not something to look forward to, but sometimes the facts or that kind of a warning will serve to get a lot of mothers on putting their babies on mother's milk, human mother's milk, and perhaps milk substitutes.
Oof.
We're looking at some other problems too, broken reactors, atomic reactors in the former East Bloc countries. Maintenance is not being pulled the way it used to be. So we're going to stress ourselves out radiation-wise, too, from both ends. Ionizing radiation from above, that's because of the ozone layer holes, and from below, our own problems.
What about the climate? Arguably, the hurricane season and now the tornado season have been horrible. I mean, absolutely horrible.
Yeah, we're looking at it. Before our study, we did not realize how delicately balanced the Earth's environment was. We assumed that it could reestablish homeostasis or equilibrium quite easily after drastic changes, but that was not true. I was amazed at how delicately balanced the planet was, the ecosphere, and the geophysics.
Right.
And it looks like the atmosphere is degrading very rapidly at timelines that we thought were out in the decades are now less than a decade. And that is resulting in the jet stream. Specifically, one of the things that we looked at was the jet stream over North America. And we're predicting that the jet stream will begin to, as I mentioned in the facts, twist and writhe and start to drop down and graze the surface of the Earth or come near it. Jet stream moves about 300 miles an hour, but it will produce chaotic effects among those, probably microbursts and other things. Eventuating, it will pick up a lot of dust. There'll be a lot of dust in the air, very dark skies. The vicissitudes of these weather changes will preclude growing crops the way we have ever grown them before. Either you grow them underground or in very solid buildings or in hermetically sealed units.
How close?
Plexiglass structures.
How close to this are we?
Again, my company is 1 year out from a final report, but I'd say we're looking at from 4 to 6 years between where the stuff really hits the fan. That means that you're going to have to start going indoors for long periods of time because of the high winds.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, let me break in here for just a second. When did this interview take place? Circa 1996, 1997. Yeah. 12 to 14 years ago. Now, did anybody notice those micro wind bursts or an exceedingly high number of dead infants or a bovine virus jumping ship into the human population? No, no. And this wasn't the only thing that dames had to say back in those days. During the height of the Hale-Bopp comet, Dames came on Bell's Coast to Coast show claiming that he and his remote viewers had observed this alien spaceship detach a can of pathogenic plant-killing material that had sent it toward the Earth, that it landed in Africa, and within a year, all plant vegetation on the planet would be dead. Now I ask you, does a radio host with an audience as big as Bell's was, and we're talking about in the millions of listeners a week, did he have a responsibility toward his audience? Because, I mean, my God, who usually is sitting up late in the night or in the wee hours of the morning listening to this? the audience loved, apparently, to be titillated. And very, very few of them ever demanded that Art and his guests show some accountability. Now, I personally had a little run-in with Ed Dames a number of years ago on another edition of Coast to Coast and in other venues. Dames had been talking publicly about remotely viewing an alien spacecraft with the remnants of a dead alien civilization and dying aliens landing here in the continental United States, and that the government was going to move in, secure this area, and basically take these people, these dying aliens, under their wing. Well, of course, among the UFO community, when he made that statement, created quite a stir. I confronted Dames at a mutual UFO meeting, MUFON, Mutual UFO Network meeting here in the Los Angeles area about roughly 10 or 11 years ago, during a presentation that he was giving there. And during a question and answer period, I asked him about that. And quite frankly, the man lied through his teeth, claimed that he had never said any such thing, which is often the case when these prophets of doom, people like Dames or Sean David Morton and others, when their prophecies and their predictions don't quite turn out the way they originally stated that they would. So, what did I do about it? I contacted a number of MUFON people that were at presentations where Dames had made these statements and had them write statements to the effect, and we ran it in UFO Magazine. So, let's boil it down. What does that mean? Well, it means that Ed Dames was a goddamn liar. Now, let's go back to the Coast to Coast program.
And, we'll have water and crop problems to boot.
And what is this all related? Now, you talked about babies dying, immunological changes, our immune systems weakening or being weakened, and the climate changes. Is this all being produced or done by, is the same effect behind it somewhere?
I'm not certain if the two are correlated. All I'm saying is that when we work the way that we work, we see these parallel tracks, the degradation of the atmosphere in conjunction with very rapid mutations and extremely serious epidemics and pandemics, mostly bacteriological, to the point where the Center for Disease Control, along with many laboratories, will not be able to keep up with vaccines, the bacteriological mutations and their subsequent epidemics, epidemiologically speaking, will run ahead of our ability to counter them, producing very serious epidemics, in particularly third world countries, Africa, and even developed countries like China.
Major, what probability do you assign to this all occurring as you have suggested it will occur? In other words, is there some probability that a different path can be...
No, the answer is no. I wouldn't be talking to you on the phone. When I speak about SciTech studies, I put my company's reputation on the line. Here we just have general and cursory results, and there's no... my signature is not on a report to the public yet, but it's the confidence factors are high enough to tell you that this is what is going to occur as far as we're concerned in the company. The timelines have not been established, but as far as we're concerned, and we have double-checked this, it's too late. There's no remedial action.
God, what advice do you give to individuals? If somebody called you and said, all right, I believe you. All this is going to happen. I think you're right.
Okay.
What can I do?
All right. You need to move to a cold climate. Colder the better. Here are the parameters.
Great.
Cold climates will stay the introduction of tropical diseases. African equine encephalitis, chikungunya, Ebola, a number of other orphan diseases are tropical, and they can't mutate fast enough to become other than latent in cold weather. So cold climates, they will be of survival value, as well as presenting the opportunity for fresh water. Snowpacks have lots of fresh water. So that's one thing. The winds that will be predominant in the mid-latitudes of the Earth, mostly, are going to be very high. So if you could build underground or be in extremely solid structures, that will be necessary. Food will be a real problem, a very, very serious problem. And
so in other words, store food.
Well, yeah, store food, but we're going to have to, as a country, start really rethinking the way we grow food. It's ridiculous to think that we can continue to grow crops the way we do now, subject to the changes in the weather that we see right now, not to mention in a few years where we'll have no food. Our wheat crop's gone for the first time, I think, in history.
It's true. Yeah. There's a horrendous drought in the Midwest. What can you forecast for that? Is there going to be relief, or it just continues to worsen?
The crop shortages and the price of food is they're both going to become aggravated by this situation to the point where we are either going to have to grow food underground or in hermetically sealed above ground units. Crops need light, so they're going to have to have light. We're going to run into some serious problems. We'll probably have to in a number of years import food from climates that are not covered, that are not dust clouded or dust enshrouded.
I can't listen to any more of this. I mean, it's just too much. So, what do we have? Well, as a broadcaster myself, I am a very firm believer that I must be responsible to the audience that listens to me, much like the Paracast is responsible to the audience that listens to them. If you are going out in the public arena and presenting yourself as a quote-unquote expert on something, or as at least an expert media person, you have a responsibility to your audience to present them with factual information. Or, hey, if it's strictly entertainment, then by God, you tell the audience it's entertainment, that you neither endorse nor necessarily refute anything that your guest is about to say. This is why people like Art, George Norrie, and others have always kept me at arm's length, and have very few times, for example, invited me to go on their programs, although I had been a guest on Art Bell's program a couple of times. But I don't couch my words, nor do I couch my information. So, we're left with a quandary. I guess the best way to go about it is just to tell you, the listening audience, to beware of anything you hear. And now, sitting here looking at the hundreds of audio tapes around me, I'm going to sign off on this broadcast and get back to what I was doing. But I'll tell you, even though it's been a very, very long time since I exposed myself to a lot of this information, I found this very instructional, and thought it was important to bring it to the audience on the Dark Matters Radio Forum. So, with that in mind, since we're just a very short while prior to the holidays, I want to wish you and yours a very happy holiday season. And until next time, right here on the Dark Matters Radio Forum, I wish you my best. Keep those eyes pointed skywards. Keep looking up.